Hey everybody, it's your girl Jessie Mae. This is the Sharp Tongue Podcast. Thank you for listening. Tell your friend to listen to the podcast. Why not? Are they going through hardships? Do they need a good laugh? Do they need a new best friend? I'm all three, motherfuckers. I'm your girl. I'm one-stop shop here. Thank you so much for listening, honestly. And if you enjoy it and you haven't left a review, go over to iTunes and leave a review. Oh, by the way, we're on Spotify as well. You can find the podcast on Spotify. The videos are, of course, now available in their full form on my YouTube page, youtube.com/JessieMayPeluso. You heard my nephew. You heard me putting my nephew to work as a child laborer on the podcast. He told you, you got to go check out the YouTube page. You got to, what did he say? Describe to my podcast. So you can see my videos, and then he told you to go to blippi.com. I did not tell him to say any of that. He is so funny. I'm sure he'll be back on. He actually did his own podcast, which is available on my Patreon fan club page, patreon.com/JessieMayPeluso for exclusive podcasts and videos. Elliot has his own little podcast on that, so go check that out. And as always, if you want to submit to Dr. Peluso, you can do that on my Instagram page. Full disclaimer, I am not a real doctor. Okay? So don't go trying to act like I'm acting like I am. I tell you, I am board uncertified. And if you don't know what Dr. Peluso is, it's a segment I do on my social media where I give free life advice ranging from buttholes to marriages and everywhere in between. Get it? And I give you my unsolicited professional life advice on how you should fix your problem. Or if you're just up Schitt's Creek, literally, like in the show. So go to Instagram Monday through Tuesdays, and you go to my Instagram story, and you can either have your question answered there, or if I don't get to it, I answer some of them on the podcast, and I do special Dr. Peluso episodes, which you already know because you're listening to this jam right now, and you're a fan. So you know the jam. You know the jam if you're a fan. Check it out, Dr. Peluso. And also, new BAM episodes are coming out on YouTube. That's Bong and Movie. That's where I get super stoned, and it's basically like a movie interruption show on YouTube. A new episode will be coming out this Friday, so look for that. It's going to feature my favorite all-time movie, The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing, but getting stoned and watching movies are my favorite pastime, and I haven't gotten around to a lot of that because I've been going through this huge grief, which is just has weighted me down. It's like a weighted blanket, except instead of it feeling like a blanket, it just feels like grief. I highly recommend it for anybody who wants to get fucking humbled by life. Have somebody you love die and then try and do work. I have given myself breaks and have allowed myself to have the space I need to cry in a fetal position in closets, which I do often. And I recommend that. That's a really good grief release. But yes, all sorts of fun things. Go to the YouTube page. New BAM episode is coming out. I have a new show coming out on YouTube. I have a new show coming out on Netflix. And all sorts of fun things. And speaking of fun things, this episode is a fun thing featuring one of my favorite comedians and people in general who, whenever I see her, she just is so joyful and funny and herself. And I just love her so much. I sing her praises. She's hilarious. And we talk a little bit about grief as well and the fortune that grief can provide and how grief can make you feel fortunate. And if you haven't figured it out, this episode features my very good friend, comedian, actor, and soon-to-be author, Miss Fortune Feimster.
Sharp Tongue Podcast. Beep, 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 beep. You're listening to the Sharp Tongue Podcast. I'm your host, Jessie Mae Peluso.
It's a personal
look. Well, it's not really a look because it's a podcast. I'm already fucking this up.
This is kind of like a verbal comedy diary,
a deep look into the crevices of my mind. It's going to get dirty.
You might cry. You probably laugh. Hopefully you'll laugh. The whole point is for you to laugh, but you also might cry.
I talk about my family. I talk about farts. I talk about love, loss, comedy, how hard it is to make it in this biz. I'm a fucking professional. Each week it's something different. Sometimes I have a guest host. Sometimes it's going to be a movie companion episode. Sometimes I just ramble about the bullshit I dealt with the week before. You never know what you're going to get. It's raw, uncut, and funny. It's me.
Hey, everybody. I'm very, very, very excited for our guest this week. Her and I have known each other for years. She's one of the more real people that I know in this industry. Her stand-up is my favorite because it's basically her view on the world and her narrative. You know when people kind of like, there's lanes for comedy, like where people do, you know, impressions or like that straight-laced Seinfeld style of telling jokes. I've always been drawn to her comedy because it is a narrative and is very real. And she's just so, so funny, from her ice cream videos to her role on the Mindy Project. I feel like she has a book in her. I don't know if she's started one, but she should, just because her voice is so unique and funny. And she's a dear friend of mine, and I don't see her enough. So please give it up for the one, the only, Joan Rivers. Just kidding. Fortune Fiends.
What's up, buddy?
The dogs start barking.
Who let the dogs out? I haven't written a book, but I do want to.
I feel like you've got one in you, Fortune.
I've dabbled in like writing outlines for them, but it never seems to be the right time. Whenever we talk to editors, they're like, not the right time. You're like, okay.
To me, it's like, you know, not the right time doesn't pertain to us anymore, because past year it's like, no, now is the time.
Right. It's a lot of work though, from what I've heard from my friends that have done them.
I know, like all of our friends, everyone around us.
I think you just have to really, really want to write a book, because I don't know that the payoffs is quite the same as it used to be.
I think you're right. You know, it's definitely not.
Do people read still?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy it.
As long as you read it, that's all I need.
Do the crosswords count? I read those.
Those involve words.
I'm a pretty avid reader. I'm a really avid.
I'm very good at reading books. And pamphlets.
Yeah. Hold on. What is going on? Dogs. Bunny.
My dogs do that.
Oh, it's the little ones. Sorry,
guys. They do it every time the mailman comes.
And let me tell you, the mailman comes here often because my sister and I have been doing what I've referred to as grief shopping. We just got from Marshall's, and I'll let you guess collectively what my sister and I spent an hour in Marshall's today.
What you spent buying?
Cumulative, my sister and I, an hour Marshall's. What do you think kind of damage her and I did together?
How much money?
Yeah, what did we spend?
$550.
Wow, you're actually like almost on the nose.
What was it?
Were you there?
Yes, I'm always with you.
It was like $575. I don't know what I got.
I only guessed that because you said collectively, the two of you. So I was kind of deducing around $250 to $275 each.
Do you have a store? Like, that was my mom and I's store. That was coming to town. We drink some wine and go on a Sunday, which is basically like walking into a forest with hungry wolves.
Looking for the deals.
Yeah.
I'm not, I don't shy away from Marshall's myself. There's usually in LA, there's always a Marshall's and a TJ Maxx and a Nordstrom Rack. Like, they're usually like all beside each other in the little strip mall kind of things. So Jax and I, my wife, we will start with like Marshall's, then TJ Maxx. Well, no, we start with Nordstrom Rack and then work our way down.
I've never done a Nordstrom Rack situation, but
I actually like it for clothes personally, because they get a lot of brands, and they
fuck, right?
What's that?
It's cheap as fuck.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Every because it's like nice stuff. You can get like Theory and Vince, which are
I don't know who most people are, but it's
they're like a male, like high end male. I'm not male, but I sometimes like a nice button down.
I buy. This is my secret for Marshalls. I don't know if you have a Nordstrom's like insider's secret, but my secret for Marshalls is you buy the male sweatpants for chicks. They fit the best.
Oh, nice. There yeah. you go. Well, the Nordstrom's rack has all these high-end brands, but they've been marked down a ton for whatever reason. And I'm never on trend. So I don't mind wearing like last season's whatever.
I don't even know what I'm wearing right now. I feel like I'm wearing something that's like from Buckle. Do you know that store Buckle?
No, I literally have a hoodie on. I'm wearing a hoodie right now. I'm a garbage person.
I'm dressed like the girl in the second act of a Hallmark holiday movie where she came in from Manhattan to the farm that her father left her, but now she's like getting used to it and like, I might live here. Lance is back, her ex-boyfriend from high school.
That's you right now.
Yeah, that's how I feel like I look right now in my leopard shawl.
Oh, I miss the quieter life.
Oh, yeah. You know, wow, there's grass here.
I'm just here to visit my family, but I fell in love and didn't expect it.
Lance is going to be back. I never could get over that high school moment where I blew him under the bleachers and he left me for Swanson.
Yeah.
Swanson.
They got married and now they're divorced. Mm-hmm. Second chance at love.
Yep. I mean, we all need that, you know.
Yeah.
I started recording this podcast for Spotify and it has to do with love. And one of the girls I'm interviewing tomorrow she called herself, let me check my show notes. Excuse my naiveness in this whole world, but she called herself a non-binary female. What does that mean?
I'm so bad with I feel like I'm 80 years old when people ask me because I'm always like, okay, I think it's not gender neutral. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. It's very interesting. Like what, as a gay woman, what is one of the most annoying things you've come across either in the industry or like when you do morning radio or any sort of like platform where people have to ask you questions, what's one of the most common things that you're asked that is so annoying?
As a gay woman or as a
this question?
That was this one. I could know because I was gonna say as a comic, you'll know that they all ask you to like tell them a joke. And
right.
That's like the worst thing to ask a comic.
That's the worst.
Because I'm like I don't just like tell, like most comics nowadays aren't like one liner comics.
No.
Whereas, you know, back in the, like if you said to Argus Hamilton right now, tell me a joke, he'd have like 10 awesome jokes for you.
10 tight jokes. If you guys don't know who Argus is, he was a Comedy Store staple. He's just been around forever.
Yeah. But he's a guy that has a lot of set up punchlines. I don't tell jokes like that. So if anyone says to me, tell me a joke, you're SOL. I have nothing to tell you.
I don't want to do that either. Like it feels, you know, just let me be me. Like, let me do my thing. Let me just have a conversation with you.
But as a gay comic, I'm trying to think if people ask me anything in particular.
They're like a stereotype because you do a lot of acting and you do a lot of auditioning.
Yeah.
Are there stereotypes that you feel that you just get put into because of that? Or like, you know, for me, I always get asked, what's the hardest thing about being a female in the industry? And there's so many aspects to it specifically about being a female. So I just wonder, like, take it a step further and being
like, they don't even ask because I'm on morning news and they're just like, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, like, oh, the grandma can't handle this.
They just want to talk about ice cream dancing. They don't want to dig deep into any of that other stuff that middle America might not like.
I could think of a question that would be annoying.
Okay. Or,
like, did you always know? I guess.
All right. I'm like, I didn't. Everyone else knew. That was the problem.
Were you out as a child? Like, did you have like an out moment?
No, I mean, I came out at 25.
Whoa,
which feels crazy now. Because, I mean, can you imagine meeting me at 24? I mean, it wasn't much different than me now. I won't say how old I am.
No, you look like you could be 24. You've got amazing skin.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But can you imagine meeting me at 24 and me being like, no, I'm straight?
Yeah. I'm open-minded. Like, okay, cool.
I just imagine people looked at me like, sure you are. Okay. Because I met a couple of those people where I was like, okay. You know, just give it time.
Give it some time.
Because you just kind of instinctually know about certain people, not everybody.
Right.
And I feel like I wear it very well. Growing up, I didn't know. I grew up in a small town of about 6,000 people.
What town?
It's called Belmont. It's right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And it just wasn't
very homosexual friendly.
Well, now my little town is very supportive. But back then there were no gay people that were out. Actually, my kindergarten teacher was gay, and but married to a woman. That's very common in the South. He was not out at the time. We found out later in life he was gay. They eventually got divorced, and then he actually was able to live his life as an out man for a bit. He's since passed, but he, like, that was a very common thing back then. If you knew someone that you thought might be gay, they oftentimes were married to someone of the opposite sex. So I didn't have any examples of out gay people.
So difficult growing up, feeling how you feel and being how you are and not having anything to equate it to or to relate to. Like, is that, do you think that that is one of the reasons why you were you scared?
Well, it's something I touched on. It was something I was trying to sort of get across in my special as to why I came out late. It just was like,
you're special.
Not even talked about. It was not even talked about, you know? So it wasn't like I was out. It wasn't like I knew I was gay and I was hiding it. I legitimately just did not know. I knew that something was off. I knew that something was different about me, but I couldn't. Like, and so that came with a lot of angst, because you just, I knew, like, why am I being so intense about this friend? Like, I know this isn't normal, but I don't know why this isn't normal. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
And so I just kind of, just did my thing. I didn't really date much, and maybe that's why I became a big overachiever, because that's how I got, validation. That's how I got any sort of attention or recognition, was by achieving, because I wasn't getting it via dating or attraction. Guys and I would meet. I always love guys. Guys and I get along really well, but we immediately have a high five scenario, even back then.
That sounds like me and all my exes. I have to be honest.
You started a relationship start with a high five.
It's so hard. I'm so awkward. Like, I always get friend zone. It's like, I want to suck your dick. What are you doing? You're wasting my time.
I don't want to high five your hand.
No, I think because it's like, I'm a cool chick. And so they're like, oh, she's just a cool chick. It's like, yeah, a cool chick who wants to suck your dick. Like, I also want to be, you know.
I'd like to high five your wiener.
Yeah. Did you date boys growing up?
No, not really. I went on a couple dates. I didn't have I didn't have a boyfriend. I went to the prom and stuff, things like that. So I just kind of didn't date. And that's another thing that a lot of gay people deal with, is a silent rejection. And that's why I think people have, you know, there are issues around being gay that you have to work through once you come out, and to get comfortable with who you are and to work on your self-esteem, because when you're young, you're getting rejected and you don't even know it sometimes. You're being told no constantly by the other sex. Not everyone. I have some gay friends who really got down with some people of the opposite sex, but most of us were like, you guys are never, are usually not interested in a lot of the lesbians or whatever. And so you just, you feel a constant sense of no. And that has to weigh on your self-esteem, you know, as you deal with that every year of your life as a young person, that has a thing where you just feel like you're not worthy of love, you know? And so you really have to work through that once you get older and do figure out who you are. It has to be something that, you know, you work on alongside coming out.
And, you know, for you, knowing how I know you, and I get this a lot, but I know how we are very good at masking emotions and also finding time and space to deal with our own emotions. Mm-hmm. Are you someone who suffered with depression and has battled demons and, you know, emotions that are mm-hmm. undealt with from having to endure yeah. all of that rejection?
I luckily am not someone who, I don't have like clinical depression. I'm very grateful. It's not something that has plagued me. It's plagued people in my family. A couple of people in my family have had to deal with it and have had to, you know, be on medication. And that helps a lot. I luckily wake up glass half full pretty much every day. And I'm lucky that that is usually my equilibrium, like that my balance. I start there.
Yep.
Not to say I don't have hard times or I don't get sad. I certainly do. But like the beginning of the pandemic, I was actually kind of in a funk. I didn't really realize it at the time, but I was in a bit of a funk for like that first like 2 months. And how that transpired was I wasn't being silly. I wasn't making videos. I wasn't putting out content. I wasn't laughing. I just was kind of here. I was just kind of quiet and just watching TV and stuff. That's how my sadness.
I think everyone yeah. was the same way. I yeah. went, check.
Yeah. And I just kind of sit in it.
Yeah.
And I don't, but if I'm in a good place, I'm usually emoting joy more. And just, I have a silliness, a lightness about me. When I'm feeling good. But I mean, I've had it in spurts. When I first started stand up touring, my first headliner year was 2010. And I was depressed. That's then.
It's like the great career dichotomy. You're on the road and all of us have felt that way. Like when I'm on the road, I reach out to everybody more than any time in my life because it's so depressing. It's mm-hmm. talk about that for people who think we're living this glamorous life, and it is amazing. Our jobs are amazing, but yeah. there well, is
especially in the beginning when you're broke, you're like finally touring, but
you're like, give me a stage.
You're lucky to make, you know, maybe $1,000 for the weekend, but that means you also had to fly yourself there, and you had to rent a car, and you had to get a hotel, and
you're going home with $200 if you're lucky.
Yes, you're not making jack squat. No one knew who I was. I only had done Last Comic Standing. So like a handful of people at every gig knew who I was. So they're making you're working for it that much more for every laugh. There's no one really respects you. And you're staying in, you know, the cheapest hotels, motels, you're by yourself, oh, you're eating God. By yourself. I was I think that was one of my most depressed times. And I called, and if you have anything going on in your personal life at home, then you can't really deal with it. And I called my mom, like, be like, what have I done with my life?
Same thing.
I graduated summa cum laude. Why am I doing this?
Did you really?
Yeah.
It sounds like it's
the highest one, baby.
Come on me. That's what it sounds like. Summa cum laude.
Come on, my laude.
Yeah, come on, my lady.
That means all of college I made all A's and I think 2 B's.
What did you study?
Well, communication. It wasn't science.
You're like, yes, I am this way.
But I still had to take all the mandatory classes. But yeah, that one was a bummer time. And then it took me a long time to find a love also. And that made me, that bummed me out a lot. Huh?
What was your relationship like with your mom, like growing up? Was she accepting of who you were, who you are? And when you came out, did that change your relationship with her?
Look at the light. The light's like shining through my window on my face.
I'm so jealous of you. I'm in a basement and there's children running everywhere.
My relationship with my mom was a journey. I think mothers and daughters probably have the most complicated relationship.
There's your first two sentences of your book, bitch.
I know, right?
Holy shit.
See, now my dogs are going crazy.
I thought those were my dogs. I was about to yell.
I think mothers and daughters butt heads a lot when you're young. And you just, your mom knows how to push your button in a way that no one else in the world can push.
They know.
And it brings out the hate when you're a teen, you know, you're just like, oh, I hate you.
All those emotions.
Yes. And so we had a real up and down rocky thing for a while where we just couldn't like, I don't even know what the word is. We couldn't even connect or talk, or like, she was my mom, I loved her, I was her kid, she loved me, but we just were working on two different planes, you know.
You have talked a lot about her, and you do talk a lot about her in your stand-up and in life, and you grew up in a very unique way. Do you want to elaborate on that a little?
Well, so my parents, I had an interesting childhood because my mom was born really rich. Her family lost all of their money through bad business decisions, and her dad died unexpectedly, all these things. So she was always this like rich woman in this poor woman's world. My dad never had money. He grew up in a trailer, nothing. They had nothing. He like hitchhiked to school. You're talking about wildly different backgrounds coming together. So I had a
creek.
So I had a wild childhood of my mom like really trying to keep up with the Joneses, as they call. And yes. My dad was like, you know, NASCAR and chicken wings and hanging out at the bar with his buddies. And so I always had these two weird worlds, and they split when I was 12. And then my mom, you know, now my mom and I are very close. And yeah, I do talk about her a lot. So I can look back at our journey. I think for my mom, she got divorced, and I can see it now that she had this huge rejection. Her husband didn't want her anymore. This 23 years of marriage didn't work out. So her focus then was like, oh, I got to find love. I don't know what true real love is. So for the next however many years, she was really focused on finding love again, where I was like, hello, hi, hey, we need you. and she can look back at it. She looks back at it now being like, oh, I can't believe I made certain choices. My brothers are older, so I was kind of the one stuck to, like they gave me, I had a roof over my head. Our bills were paid, not always on time. My grandmother lived down the street, so I had people looking out for me, and my mom was there for me in a lot of ways too, but that was her main focus. So that was our other issue, was just trying to like get her priorities situated.
And it, you know, going deeper into your mom, which I know a little bit of history on, it makes sense knowing what her illness became, knowing what her desire was, because I think that's a very common coupling. People who have this type of illness, which I'll let you talk about, missing some love. And all of us in life are searching for love.
Yeah. And,
you know, I go to a therapist, Brett Costin. He's amazing, in LA. And he said something one day that really resonated with me when I was talking about stuff I was stressed about. And I was like, you know, I really hope this something comes through. It was a gig or a job or something. And he goes, that right there is a toxic behavior. It's somewhat toxic to put hope outside of yourself,
mm-hmm.
because all you need is already within you. You just need the tools to dig out some of the pain that's there to uncover the truth. And the truth is we all have the love we need within us. And
yeah,
it's very consistent with what your mom developed throughout the years and what you grew up in.
Yeah. She was looking to be validated from men. She wanted a boyfriend to validate her, and she wasn't, you know, seeing what she had.
Which was these beautiful.
Hang on.
I've seen photos of you as a child.
I'm sure I was a turd too, though.
All were. Are you kidding me? Developing emotions suck. I mean, my niece and nephew are fucking demons, but I get it.
But again, I might not have gone on the journey that I did. I don't know that I would have tried so hard at school. I don't know if I would have tried so hard to leave my hometown to make more of myself had I been loved completely.
I know. If we were loved completely, oof, girl.
I got really lucky because, you know, at one point I thought, well, I mean, my grandmother was a big part of my life. And once she died, I thought, well, I did have this thought. Well, I guess I'm an orphan now, even though I had parents.
My sister and I have said that every day since my mom passed away. That's so funny.
Yeah. And I really, at that time, wasn't sure that we would ever get our relationship on track. And then long story short, I moved away to Spain for a year right after college. And it was a year of just me being like alone for almost an entire year. I didn't know hardly anyone, and I was just lonely. And I, for the first time in my life, missed my family. I missed my parents. And all that like anger and resentment that I had been building up, my mom drove with me to across. When I got back from Spain, I had a job in LA. My mom moved with me, drove with me across the country. That was the most time we had spent together in a long time. And, we always had this like role reversal where I was kind of the mom and she was kind of the kid. And I remember we stopped in Vegas and we were walking down the hall and I kind of snapped at her in a way you do at a kid who's like, you know, like misbehaved or something. And the security guard lady was like, "That's your mom." And I was like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
And like, so it made me kind of just be like, you know what? I have to allow her to, I can't keep holding on to the past. I can't keep holding on to resentment. It's doing nothing for me. It doesn't make me feel good. I have to allow her to grow. If I keep holding her accountable to these things from the past, we'll never have a relationship.
No.
That was the beginning of us really healing. And we've been really close ever since.
Yeah.
Let me shut this blind real quick.
It feels like Icarus is in your front yard. Icarus is in your front yard. Her light coming through. She literally is facing the sun setting in LA and it's so damn bright. I miss it though. Me being here on the East Coast, I'm jealous of her sunshine.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I was telling everybody how I'm jealous of your sunshine there in Los Angeles.
So I'm grateful. So like we don't delve into the past a lot anymore because it's kind of like it happened. Now we can laugh about it. I tell jokes a lot, but I'm grateful that we were able to move past all that stuff.
You know, there's something about forgiveness being so powerful. It's like one of the most powerful mm-hmm. things we can do for ourselves. Because to elaborate on what you were talking about, you're not forgiving her, you're forgiving yourself. You know, it's you're letting things go that, you know, emotions and things that were done, because I've done the same thing with my mom. Mm-hmm. And you do that for you so that you can have a relationship with that individual. You know, acceptance is so damn hard to accept. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's the irony of it. It's the hardest thing to accept. So I think being able to look past our parents' shortcomings, because it's hard not to idolize them. You know, growing up, they're the first faces you see and first touch it. Hopefully, if you're fortunate enough, you get all those things. And then when we get podcasts and we look back, we're like, oh, they were just fucking people.
Yeah, I mean, once you get older, you can see like, oh man, they were just doing the best they could. And you don't really get that when you're younger. You're just like, oh, these guys are real turds.
Yeah. And there's such a point of contention and argument. It's like, no, they grew up in a certain environment, certain era where things are different. You know, is it going to be the same thing for us? Like,
yeah.
You know, if and when either of us have children, I'm sure there's going to be gripes with how we raise them or.
Well, and your parents have traumas. I mean, I can look at both my parents and be like, oh, this thing that happened to you, I can see how it's totally affected all these other things. And if you had been able to just deal with that and talk that out, maybe this, that, and this wouldn't have happened. But, you know, it was a different time. Therapy wasn't, you know, it was kind of frowned upon for a long time.
Yeah.
And just like, kind of sucked it up, you know.
Women were allowed to talk at all, and men weren't allowed to say anything emotional. I wonder, like, because we have such a hindsight vantage point to look back and equate their emotional shortcomings to their environment and what was going on in society, that they were so shut off, and how that affected everything, you know, their children not being able to communicate and what that sort of snowballs into. I wonder if there's going to be some sort of repercussion or occurrence from being too open,
right? We don't hold anything back.
What's gonna be the
downside? With all the social media, we're all like sharing every thought that comes to our mind. We're like, maybe we don't have to do that.
The president's crying,
but
just can't do it. Or she.
But the thing I realized with a lot of it, and again, I'm not saying I have it all figured out. My mom and I certainly have our moments where I act like, you know, where I'm all like, you did this, you know, I haven't, but for the most part, I let it all go. I just, people find a real comfortability in being the victim. And I didn't want that for myself. I don't think that being a victim serves you in any way, even if you are genuinely a victim. You know, to be at the mercy of whatever your traumas were. Oh, don't let it have that too. You know what I mean?
I that is the motto I have lived my life under. And it, like, you don't think living your life as a victim serves you in any way, even if you were actually a victim, is such a powerful statement, because it takes a certain level of bravery to live like that, but the opposite is so much worse. You know, to be able to like live your life as someone who survived something as opposed to have it be your crutch is such a better fucking existence. And in comedy, it comes up a lot. I don't know about you, because like I said before, one of the things I love about your comedy is there's a levity to it. I know when you're on stage, I'm learning something about you and who you really are. And that's a comedy I gravitate towards.
Go ahead.
Oh my God, we're finishing each other's sentences. No, I was just saying, I think as a comedian, you know, I talk a lot about my past, and one of my first sexual experiences, everybody's heard this on the podcast, I was raped the first time I ever had sex. And so I talk about hope in my comedy. And I did this one set, and these two girls came up to me after the show, and they were so mad. They were so mad about it. And how could I talk about that? And it's not right for, you know, it's bad for women to talk about that.
That's
crazy.
That's your journey.
Yeah.
You want.
And I asked them after I let them talk and I heard them out, and I was like, okay, can I ask you one question to both of you? I have one question for you both. Were you raped? Both of them were. And I said a very harsh statement that was said to me.
Yeah.
Your trauma and your trauma's healing is your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a harsh thing to hear, but like you said, you have to find a way to overcome it. And you've overcome a lot of fucking hardships in your life. And, you know, for someone like you, it's interesting because I asked you earlier about like depression and how you feel about it, how it's not something that's necessarily a huge personality flaw or factor in who you are. I feel the same way. And I think because we've been through so much shit, we've been humbled by life.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I've any friend that I, when especially when I moved to LA and I had friends that never really been through hardships, you go, oof. Buckle up, because
oh god, it's like, what do you have to offer?
It's gonna happen. I don't know if you know a person in the world that hasn't escaped some sort of hardship, trauma. It's coming at some point.
It's fucking coming,
and you just have to be able to deal with it. And then, sure enough, when those hardships, in whatever way they came, hit those people, it was like a tsunami. They were like, oh my god, what do I do? And it made me for the first time really grateful that I had overcome things growing up to sort of have that tool, because even, you know, things are gonna be hard, they're gonna suck, but it's how you deal with it. And I just try to come from it of like, how does it motivate you instead of how does it bring you down?
So what would you say in your life, the three most painful occurrences that, whether they motivated you or not, what are those like, it doesn't have to be three, but like the most defining things in your life that changed you?
Well, as what motivated me originally was not having money. I mean, again, I can't, like, you know, when I say not having money, I can't know what it's like to live on the street or to be in another country of extreme poverty. So I'm not comparing myself to those situations. But for us personally, my mom was a single mom and a teacher. And it was basically the three of, you know, my mom and us three kids on a teacher's salary. And that, which is not much.
It's nothing.
And so, you know, it was very common for us to be sitting in the house and the lights go out and you go, I guess the bill hasn't been paid, you know.
Like, and, pay the bill, you guys think Bill's some person. You're like, this guy sucks.
Bill really needs to pay.
Yeah, where is Bill? Every time he shows up.
And you know, my mom, to her credit, got, you know, she would get summer jobs like at Quincy's, which was it's basically like a Sizzler. And
oh,
you know,
I know Quincy's, girl.
Yeah. And it's very humble. You know, she had a master's degree. It's a very humbling experience for this woman, again, coming from the background that she came up from in. Suddenly she's waiting on her friends who like wouldn't even acknowledge her. They were like embarrassed for her or something, which is so ridiculous that they wouldn't even acknowledge her. I'm like, how shitty must she have felt? So I try to give her credit, you know, because she had to deal with some real stuff too. I mean, she's like making $2 an hour selling big fat yeast rolls. And people, she was lucky if people tipped a dollar back then. I mean, people were real assholes. So we just didn't have, we learned to get by or whatever, but it did set in motion this thing with me of like, I'll never, you know, I just remember us as a family just being like trying to figure out like, how are we going to keep Price in college? How are we gonna, you know, pay for my grandmother's funeral? Like these things that you just dealt with as a family. So it motivated me to be like, I'm never going to be in that situation where I don't know how I'm going to pay for something. I'm going to work my ass off and do whatever I can so that the lights don't get shut off. So that was a big motivating factor for me.
That's a powerful motivator. And for a lot of people, I think, you know, I was listening to Charlize Theron talk about turning pain into purpose on NPR. I'm a nerd. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
That's good.
She talked about that, you know, because she grew up in a very...
Yeah, some trauma.
Yeah, a lot of trauma. And, you know, they had slaves in their house. And
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
They had, you know, runaway slaves and all sorts of, you know, dealing with, like, the apartheid and growing up in the environment. But she spoke a lot about turning pain into purpose. And do you think... because you and I are two white females, it's easy for us to say this.
What do you mean? Say what?
Like that we could just, you know, don't be a victim and turn your pain into purpose. Like, is it anyone can do?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing is I've never walked in anyone else's shoes. So I can only speak from my journey. I don't know what it would be like to be in a situation where your chips are down and then you also have this systemic situation on top of that. I find that that would be a very difficult thing to overcome, and it people do, but it would not be easy. I had advantages, even though I didn't have money. I still had opportunity. I worked hard, but opportunities did come. Not everyone's lucky to get opportunities.
What advantages do you think you had?
I mean,
I've thought a lot about this, like, and I do, I know there are things that are existent in culture and society where there are systemic issues, but I'm looking at your story and my story, and I feel you and I individually had more disadvantages than advantages. But that's why I'm genuinely curious as to maybe I'm blind to my advantages and I'm not seeing them.
I mean, the simplest of advantages that you can drive in your car down the road and not worry that if a cop pulls you over, you're going to be killed. You know, look, I mean, I
smelled my car, Fortune. It is, it's like dead dog and weed.
I mean, you know, even though I was poor, I did have a roof over my head. I had a mom with a master's degree who, you know, could have a teaching job that could, you know, provide to a certain extent. And, I mean, I can't say like, it's so hard for me to say what advantage I had versus what other people didn't have, because it's I've only lived in this skin.
Yep.
And so I think it would be an easier thing for me to see if I came from a place of complete disadvantage.
Yep.
It would be easier for me to be like, well, here's what I didn't have. And so I'm still learning about the, you know, the privileges that come with the color of your skin. I don't really know, and I'm not an expert at it.
It is hard. You know, it's one of those things where people have to have compassion and understand that when you live your life a certain way and you don't know,
yeah,
it takes some time to look back and be like, oh, okay, I can see where.
And I've had to have friends, you know, teach me, be like, you know, here's what you're not seeing. And I'm like, oh yeah, I just, unless I've walked a mile in someone's shoes, it's so hard for me to know, you know.
It is. But
I just try to, like, you know, live my life in a way that is, I work hard. I want to keep the lights on, you know. I'm just like,
you're individual, like you.
Yeah.
I look at my people that I've kept in touch with as much as I have kept in touch with people during these past few years. And I think the common denominator is a genuine, positive, but grounded approach to life. And the other thing that I know about you is you also aren't a people pleaser and you know your worth. And, you treat people very fairly and kindly. And I know it sounds like, again, when you're in it, you don't realize it. It sounds like those should just be fucking things
right.
from people. But most industries filled with a bunch of fucking broken assholes.
Yeah. I mean, that comes from another influential person, which I touched on earlier was my grandmother. She was a very influential thing and a person in my life. And she was kind to everybody and she was beloved by everybody. She spent her days, because, you know, by the time I was little, she was well into retirement. So she would like cut flowers from her garden and take it to the people, the bank tellers and the secretaries at school. She would bake things for like the librarians in town, and she was just always giving. She was very, she had a light around her. So I spent a lot of time with her. I was kind of like her shadow growing up, and I just watched this person. I watched her be so kind to everyone, and I saw the look on the people's faces when they received that kindness. And so that had a big influence on me, because I was like, I want to make people feel like she feels, like she makes people feel. And so I think that how I treat people is very much based on that. And I know she died when I was 18, which is another big influential thing. And I know if I not to say I can't be an asshole. I certainly, I'm very kind until... You know,
your dogs start.
There's barking. Reason not to be kind.
You're blind, but I bet you have one less dog. There's like an uncovered earth mound in your backyard.
No, but I would be so embarrassed if she saw me behave poorly. You know what I mean? She's dead, but you know, no, she could be with me.
Please watch. Have you seen signs of her?
Nothing blatant. I just feel very. Like I've never like she's not I've not had experiences with paranormal stuff. My grandmother and my mom have had those experiences, so I've never been visited by a ghost or anything.
Have you done psychedelics?
No, I'm such a nerd. I'm a nerd. I don't do any of that stuff. Done
crackers psychedelics.
I'm like, I drink coffee.
I'll send you a bag of food. Your grandma will show up.
She'll show up for sure. Like, hello, I've been waiting on you. But I feel her around me, but her presence is always like, I'm named Fortune. It's my middle name, but I'm named that because of her. She wanted that to be my name. It was her mother's last name. Like, she just was such a presence for me that everything I do was to be like, I want to make this woman proud.
And so when you were 18, I mean, I think about emotions I had at 18. What's the first thing you did when you found out? And how did you find out? And what was the first thing you did when she passed away?
So she was, she got cancer. She was 86, I want to say. So she was older. It was my senior of high school. She had a spot on the side of her face, skin cancer. And what's the word?
Metastasized.
You know what I mean.
Matt,
became cancerous. And so
ask Matt for a size.
That's yes. So the doctor, she went to the doctor and I don't think I could have handled it. My mom was with her, and the doctor like got on her knees and just said, basically told my grandmother she had a year to live. Which I think about as a doctor how hard that's got to be, like looking someone in the eye and be like, this is it, pal. And so they came home, and my mom told me, and it was like devastating. I was just like, oh my God. So I just went out to my grandmother sitting in the car, and we just stared at each other. We didn't even speak. We just stared at each other for like, I want to say like 15 minutes. And then we just kind of like, okay, we never talked about it at that point. We never said like, this is it, you know? And so a year went by and I graduated from high school. And then you kind of just hope that like that doctor was wrong, that it was a shitty doctor, because she was too old to get radiation. Chemotherapy, it would have
annihilated her.
Yeah,
treatment would have killed her.
She was very skinny and frail anyway, because she was older. And So she was just basically riding it out, which is crazy. And so at the end, after I graduated, she had a doctor's appointment. They were like, she actually has 2 weeks to a month. I'm like, God dang it, that doctor was right. And so what started as a little spot on her face, it went inside, it went into her brain. And it went around her spinal cord. We didn't know this at the time. We just knew it had, this is probably pretty graphic, kind of eaten the side of her face. So she had a big bandage here. And you're like, I can't believe that this is the thing that's killing my grandmother.
Yeah, this like little non-crypt thing that on a microscopic level is doing detriment to her cells.
I remember it's kind of a long story. I'll try to condense it. So the beginning of the summer, she basically said to my mom, like, we're going to see, my first name's Emily. They call me Emily. We're going to see Emily off to college. And that was, so this was May. And that was
my sister's name.
Really?
Yes.
And so mid August was college, like August 13th. And my mom internally was just like, there's no way, that's 3 months away. That's not, but she didn't want to say that to her. So she goes, yep, we will. Anyway, so the summer went on. My grandmother kept losing weight, kept becoming very frail. There would be times where we were like, this is it. We had a hospice nurse. They would like tell us, she was very spiritual. She'd be like, you guys need to tell her it's okay to die. But you know, when you're 18 and you're like, this is my most important person in my life, you're being like, hey, I'm okay, you can die. And I was like sobbing, you know. I had to tell her by twice, because bitch would be laid out and then you tell her it's okay to die, pour my heart out, my heart is like being run over by a, you know, car, and the next day she'd be like, what's up guys? And you're like, what? It was such a journey. It was the hardest summer of my life, but there were some really sweet moments too. My dad picked her up because she got to like 89 pounds. My dad picked her up and walked around her house to look at, she had like treasures and stuff that she really loved. And we had someone come sing her songs. There's like really beautiful things that happened.
She was at home.
She was at home. We kept her at home. Yeah. And they had a hospital bed for, anyway, long story short, it was time for me to go to college. August 12th. She had made it. She was she was kind of unconscious. I wasn't sure if she could hear me. But the more I woke up to go to college, to drive to school, and I went and said bye to her. And I don't know if she could hear me or what. And I basically knew that was the last time I would see her. And the next morning, at 10 a.m., I felt her die. She died. So she held on.
Die.
I felt it. I'm a Cancer. I'm like an empath. I feel energy. And I think her energy was such a part of me that I just felt it go. And I called her house, and my dad answered, and he went, can we call you back? Cause she like literally had just died and he didn't know what to say to me. So he called me back, but she's being like, I'm sorry, I didn't know what to say to you. Like, your grandmother just died. I knew that, that she had. So anyway, we found out from a cancer doctor who was a good friend with my mom that all these prominent cancer doctors had studied her case. And they saw how this cancer had, at the time, like I said, we didn't know, it had surrounded her brain, surrounded her spinal cord. They said this woman would have been in so much pain. And she didn't say ouch one time in 3 months. They said there's no reason she should have lived past 2 weeks. And my mom's friend said, well, she said she was going to see her granddaughter off to college. And they go, sometimes there are things that science can't explain, and that's what she did. She willed herself to live for 3 months in agony, just to see me off to college. So you take and that. You have
to carry that for the rest of
Buddy, it changed my life.
I know.
I go, I can't be a piece of shit. Nope. Because this person did something for me that no person will do in my, like, that is something that not many people would do. And how can you not then make something of your life from that day forward? I mean, it changed me.
I think that's, you know, you just said that's something that not many people in your life would do for you. And that's one of the things I feel like we take for granted is the sacrifices people make for us. And, mm-hmm. you know, she stood by her word for you. And that's a testament to how tight you guys were and how much you meant to her. And, you know, she knew how important it was for you. And the fact that you were able to turn that into motivation to be
That's why I go by Fortune. I started going by Fortune when I was 23 because I was like, she wanted me to be named Fortune. My mom chose Emily because that was her favorite name. And I thought, whatever I do from here on out, when anyone calls me Fortune, when I get, if I make anything of myself with this name Fortune, it's because of her. And any acknowledgement for Fortune is acknowledgement for her, in my opinion.
Well, so. You made me cry, so I hope you fucking feel good.
I don't talk about that story. I don't talk about it much because I was able to hold it together today. But
I think I made you cry.
But it is it's a story that makes me happy and makes me sad, you know.
Or I think somewhere in that is, you know, there's truth in that shit. And people listening to this have all gone through some sort of loss. And, you know, I'd love your opinion on, you know, maybe just a few things for people to consider or tools they can use on how to cope with grief or loss. Like for me, you know, I meditate every morning. I work out every day and I start my day with some sort of gratitude. To me, those things that have helped me through these past few months and the magnitude of the emotion of the loss. So
we're in the thick of it.
I still am.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say how old I am, but it's been a long time. Not that, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, when I was I did so many things to deal with the grief at 18, you know.
I'm saying it's so hard at that age. You're dealing with new emotions still.
And a brand new college. I was like, it was a lot. So I had to try on a lot of different hats to deal with the grief. Luckily, I didn't, like, because of her sacrifice, I didn't. If she hadn't done what she did, I probably would have been a big piece of shit. Who knows? I would have just been a big loser. And I don't know what I don't know what my life would have looked like. But that changed the course of it. To deal with it, I don't even know what I did. I mean, time has obviously helped me. And I'll be totally fine. That, you know, there are many days I don't think about it. It used to sit with me all the time. She was at the forefront of my day for a long, long time, where not a day went by I didn't think about it. That dissipates over time. You just start to live your life. It becomes the norm, unfortunately. I've lived more life without her now than I did with her, which seems crazy. But I'll be totally fine. And then suddenly, like, there's a documentary on cancer and I'm like in a fetal position on the floor. I'm like, I'm fine. I just don't know when it's going to hit me, you know, but it is on its own timeline. I will say that you cannot choose when the grief will hit you when you're out of the thick of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can't.
Probably you have that with your, you know, dad sometimes.
Yes, it's still, you know, it's there's no handle on it. You know, it's like being in the ocean. That's what it feels like. It's like an emotional, it's an emotion. It's
yeah. And I don't let many people see it. I just like would sob in the shower every now and then.
I was in fitting rooms before the cold.
Oh, my wife has, Jax has experienced some of it with me where every now and then it'll just hit me and I'll just be sad. But, you know, you just deal with it. You just feel it. It's, I think in a way it's like a little, your body's kind of honoring that memory and that person and the relationship and the influence they had on you. So I don't see it as a negative thing. I think it's a part of it.
What do you think was one of the most important things grief has taught you?
Well, I never want to have kids because I can't handle losing things.
Oh, my sister loses her kids all the time. She has two, but most days we just have one. We're like, well, we hope the other one shows up by dinner.
Well, I clearly have abandonment issues. It took me a very long time to even get dogs because I was like, well, they're just going to die. Why would I want to love something like that? So I've at least gotten past that. I have two dogs now that I love dearly, but I'll look at Biggie and just be like, please never leave. It definitely, I mean, it makes you appreciate, you know, the people in your life. I'm still guilty of taking things for granted. I have not, none of us have truly mastered the art of like appreciating the people in our life the way that we should. But I mean, it taught me that you can overcome. I mean, the pain I felt with that is like nothing I've felt with anything else in my life. And I thought, well, I'm here. I made it. If I can overcome that, then I can overcome whatever. I mean, but let's not get crazy life. Let's not give us any more challenges. I'm not inviting that into my life. But it does, yeah, you learn that you can get through it.
Well, speaking
and of you'll get through it. It's hard. It sucks. You've lost both parents in a relatively short amount of time.
I'm literally an orphan. Yeah.
It sucks, man.
It sucks the worst. But, you know, like you said, it's a motivator for me. I'm not crippled by the victimhood that I could feel or some days that I realize is a natural reaction. I'm motivated. And so, you know,
I'm glad you're allowing yourself to be sad because you should to like sweep it under the rug is not helpful.
No. And like when you do that, you want drugs and dick. And right now there's a quarantine and those aren't readily available. I have some drugs, but I've had no dick. So like more drugs than normal.
You don't want that COVID dick right now.
No.
Just deal with your grief. It'll be there.
Well, I really appreciate you being open and honest and forthcoming about all the stuff you've experienced. And if you could say, this is something that I think is personal to each person, but is there anything you do, like for me, before I go to bed, maybe because I'm in it, I say I love you to my mom and dad.
Oh, that's sweet.
Every night.
Yeah.
Is there anything you still do? Is there any little ritual you have left with your grandmother?
Anytime, it's not a daily ritual, but anytime something really cool has happened, like a bigger thing, like something I really wanted or some sort of acknowledgement in the business that I hadn't had before, I always go, thank you. I always go, Nana, I appreciate that. I just give her a little shout out. I always make sure to verbally include her and acknowledge her when any of these things happen, because I know she's watching out for me.
Yeah, she may not be here physically, but she's still here spiritually and in some sort of energy form. So I always talk about the relationship isn't gone. It just evolves.
Yeah. I get Nana shout outs.
Nana shout outs to everybody. We're all you. Orphans, bitch.
I'll even say it to Jax, if we have something cool happen, I'll be like, Nana's looking out for us. Shout out, Nana.
Well, thank you so much. Where can everybody find you? I know you're working on something right now, which obviously will take some time to come out, but where can everybody listen to you, find you, and see you?
Well, I'm on the old Instagram
at
Fortune Feimster, F-E-I-M-S-T-E-R.
It ain't true.
I'm on there. I try to make people laugh with silly videos and on Facebook. And I'm doing that Netflix after party with David Spade. It's on Netflix. So
it's really funny. It's a fun time.
We're fun in our way. You know, it's us interviewing the cast of popular Netflix shows. So it's fun to kind of be on the, like, you know, part of the Netflix family talking about these shows that everyone's obsessed with because we're all in quarantine.
Yes.
Or a version of quarantine. So I'm out there. And one of these days, Jessie Mae, all of us stand-ups will be back on tour, but not yet.
Back on our depressing tour.
And the nice thing is that we can stay at a little bit nicer hotel.
Oh, I mean, girl.
I have air conditioning now.
Well, I fucking love you, Fortune.
Same, buddy. I appreciate you having me on. And
Thanks so much.
I'm sending you big hugs. I know you're going through it, and you will get through it.
Send me big hugs and also big drugs.
Drugs, hugs, and D.
Shit.
Drugs, hugs, and dick.
Sounds like a fucking great weekend.
I don't know any. I can't really send you any dick. It's such a funny word.
An Indian giver now. I need it. Send it. Send it.
Wait for your vaccine.
Rude.
Then get it. Rude. At least the first shot.
Yeah, and I can get the second one. That's the one that counts.
There you go.